This is the Past Lives podcast, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. To get access to the extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. This week, I'm talking to Mickey Havelock about her book, Dying to See You, A Medium Describes Her Near-Death Experience. Mickey is a spiritual medium and intuitive coach. For many years, she has worked with her mediumship in public demonstrations and private readings. Mickey had a near-death experience in 2014 when her heart stopped and she had the calmest yet most exhilarating experience of her life. Hi, Mickey. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Wanted to talk to you about your book, Dying to See You, A Medium Describes Her Near-Death Experience. And it's such an interesting book, and you go into a lot of detail into your near-death experience, which I just loved. It started off... Well, you felt like it was almost like you had indigestion, and you say you went into a calm sort of feeling, and then you heard a voice that said, "Call an ambulance." That's quite ominous.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, obviously, even before this, I was a medium, so I'm used to conversing, if you like, with the other side. So I'm used to just allowing myself to go into that still space and allow myself to connect. And I was just in so much pain, and it was nothing I could do would get that pain to go away. And it was getting worse, and I was just beside myself, really. And I just thought, I just don't know what to do. How can I stop this pain? And that's when I just sat and just sort of allowed myself to connect, to just say, just help me. What do I need to do here? And I just literally heard that calm voice that just said, dial 999 and call an ambulance. So that's what I did. I just followed it. And they were all quite convinced that it wasn't my heart and that it was just indigestion, or they considered a burst ulcer at one point. That wasn't until I was in the hospital. But the paramedics and everything took, you know, when they turned up, they took everything, blood pressure, and checked all these things, and were quite convinced and said, no, it's not, it's, you know, the good news is it's not your heart. So we're not really sure what's going on. So let's take you in as a precaution. The rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. And when you got in there, that's when, I suppose, you could say things went bad, but with that near-death experience, that didn't seem like things were so bad. But how did it start? What's the first thing that you saw?
So when I was actually in hospital, and they've already told me afterwards that if I hadn't have been in A&E, I probably wouldn't have survived. They wouldn't have been able to bring me back. So it's quite interesting that I was there when it happened. You know, I do believe in that sort of divine timing of everything. But when it actually, when the point came when I died, if you like, I was just, for me, like I said, I mean, I was with my daughter and I just said to her, the doctor had gone off to organize an emergency camera down my throat, because she was like, we think it might be a burst ulcer. We want to get a camera down to see what's going on, why you're in so much pain, because it's definitely not your heart. So, and I remember saying to her, I don't really care what you do. Just do whatever to get this pain to stop. So she went off and I just looked at my daughter and I said, I've got to tell you, I think I'm going to pass out, because I'd started to become really lightheaded. And it was just like I was very faint. And I said, so I think I'm going to pass out. And she walked around the bed to get me a glass of water. And when she was on her way back round, that's when she realized that I'd gone into a massive seizure. And then everything happened on the monitors, and I literally had this seizure apparently, and then everything flatlined and stopped. For me, I literally said to her, I think I'm gonna pass out. And then when I turned and looked the other way, there was my husband, who had died 4 years previously with cancer and what have you. And I was just so excited to see him. It was the most natural thing. It just felt so natural that he would be there. And I just remember looking at him and being so excited and just jumping off the bed and into his arms and just holding him and breathing him in and drinking him in and just soaking in him, because I'd missed him so much for 4 years. And it didn't even cross my mind that this was weird or maybe I was dead. It just didn't cross my mind.
And you say he looked quite young. How young did he look?
Well, he looked how he did when I first ever met him. I mean, we've been together 21 years. And I was 21 when I met him, just turned 21. And he was, I think, 26, just about to turn 27. So that's how old he looked. He looked in his early 20s and just in his prime, and just exactly as I remember him when I first ever met him. He didn't look, you know, how he did at the end of his life when he was so ill and frail and fragile. He was young and vibrant and just full of light and love and energy.
And your communication, as you say, you could hear him, but his lips didn't move. It was some kind of telepathy.
Yeah, it took a while to realise that. Although we were having a conversation, it's no different to you and I having this conversation now. That's exactly how the conversation appeared to be taking place. But it took me a while to realise, actually, his lips weren't moving. His mouth wasn't moving to form the words to communicate with me. It was more of a thought process. And I soon quickly realized that even my thoughts, he was aware of everything I was thinking. So that's a strange one. Because at the moment, you know, even if we're having a conversation, I can think something that you won't be aware of what I'm thinking. But in this, it was like there was no hiding nothing.
Yeah. And was that a bit, I don't know if shocking's the word, you start to think, I've got to be really careful what I think now.
I don't think I ever really thought, oh, I better watch myself here. It would just catch me off guard sometimes, because I'd think something and he'd reply and respond to it. And it would kind of get me every time. It was like, I think by the second or third time it happened, I was like, oh, I've got to remember he can hear my thoughts. It just always came as a bit of a surprise, I suppose, when he responded to something I was thinking of.
And you talk about the brightness and the brilliance of the colours, and it seemed like the light was so bright, but your eyes were fine with that.
Yeah, it's the weirdest. Do you know one of the biggest things, Simon, I found was trying to put this into words and trying to explain it in a way that we can kind of understand it, if you like, or somebody else can understand it, because there aren't really words sometimes for some of what you experience or what I experience to be able to really explain it properly. And the brightness is, like I say, the only way I can describe it is like the brightest, sunniest day where you'd need sunglasses to be able to even look towards the sun or in that kind of direction. And you'd need to wear sunglasses. But here it was like this brilliance and this brightness but there was no, there was not even a squint. You didn't even have to squint with it. It was perfectly normal. And the colors are, they're just iridescent. And there's something about the colors that are beyond any color that I've kind of experienced here in this, you know, earthly world, I suppose. There's just more of a depth to them and more of a life. I think that's the way I would describe it. There's more of a life to the colours than the colours that we know here.
Your husband was so much younger, but what about you? Did you feel you're in exactly the same body as when you're alive? Were you wearing the same clothes as when you were alive?
Do you know what? I've got to be honest with you. I didn't really pay too much attention to what I was wearing. I didn't really look down at myself or look in a mirror. I was so enthralled with everything else that was going. What I can say to you is that obviously for how I was feeling and my health status at the point of obviously when I died, I had so much more energy. I felt young and vibrant. I felt like I had boundless amounts of energy. I mean, I ran through a field, and at that point, I'd have run through a field. You know, if someone was chasing me, I'd have run through a field, but I'd have been breathless by the end of it and puffing and panting and, you know, trying to catch my breath. But there was none of that. It was so, I can't describe it. It's like there's just and a boundless amount of energy. We're not restricted by this physical body. And this physical body is what would get breathless. This physical body is what would, you know, get tired or exhausted or need to rest, need to sleep, etc. This was beyond that. There was no limitations of a physical body.
And so what happened next? So you were in the hospital with your husband, and then it seemed the way you described it was suddenly you were just somewhere else. You didn't have that near-death experience thing of going through a tunnel. You were just there.
No, I never experienced a tunnel or, you know, that sort of like, there's a bright light, go towards the bright light. Everything was bright. Everything was iridescent. And he just said to me, I've got so much to show you. And I was so excited that I literally just took his hand and kind of like, we found ourselves in this field. I found myself in this field with him. And it was strange because even every time we changed location, if you like, there wasn't a journey to be taken to go from one to another. It was literally just, I'd kind of just be taken. And then the next thing I know, I was there. I can't recall any kind of journey between each different area. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of, it's a bit like if I thought of somebody now, I'm sat here in my home, obviously talking to you, and then I'd think of my parents and I'd just be there. There wouldn't be a go downstairs, get in the car, get, you know, take the journey from here to there. It was just, you just ended up there. So there is no recalling of any sort of journey. It was literally just, hey, I have something to show you. And boom, we were in this field.
And then you went to some water and you said you touched it and you felt its life force connecting with you. What does that mean, though? Is the water alive or something?
The best way I can describe it is everything is energy, and everything is energy. And we are, this is what I've learned, we are connected to absolutely everything, absolutely everything. And as well as the fact that we're connected to everything, everything is energy. So the energy of the water was what I was connecting with. And it was understanding it. It was being able to connect with it in such a way that somehow I understood its journey and how it had travelled and what it had gone through on its travels and how it had come to be in this section here where we were and how it had moved. And it's fascinating now that I find myself, if I'm stood by a river or a stream and I find myself looking at that water in a whole different way now because of that experience. It's realizing that everything has energy, that we just look at it and think, oh, it's just water running from here to there. It has its own energy. It has its own life force. And actually there's a chap, isn't there? Now that we're talking about it now, reminds me of the chap, and I can't remember his name. And he did a study on water and took photographs of what drops of water look like when it's in different scenarios, or if you surround it with love, or if you surround it with hate, and how that water. So I guess the kind of they correlate, don't they?
I've seen some weird pictures of water on Facebook groups, but I didn't really know the background to it.
Yeah, and it's really annoying me because I can't remember his name. But that goes to show that water has energy and that energy affects water. And, you know, it's that, I mean, now we're getting into a whole other realm, because as we're talking, my mind's now opening up and going, well, I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, we are all made up of water too, right? We're so much percentage of water. So, and it's all affected by energy. But this, because I'm going to go off on a tangent if I'm not careful, but this going back to my experience, it's just the fact that everything has energy and everything has its own life force. And we're connected to all of that. We are all connected, and everything is just a small part of the whole.
And then moving on, you went to an apartment, and I thought this was really weird. You said you went into a room and there was a small girl standing by a jewelry box, and then you realized it was you. What happened there?
Yeah, it's like looking at the memory of me as a child, you know? I suppose on looking at it, you know, it's all that we all have our inner child within us, right? And that person within us that is young and innocent and vibrant and has all that energy and doesn't have any sort of cares and feels, you know, that as a child, I felt safe. And that was my favorite place to be, was, you know, my grandparents' flat. And, you know, wasting time just being lost in the world of rooting through her jewelry box. And, you know, she didn't have anything of, you know, great value in there, but it was treasure. It was, you know, all her sparkly beads. And I just spent so much time there. And that's when I realized that I was almost looking at a reflection of myself as a child. And that time of just standing there and getting lost in the moment and being so present in the moment and connected in that moment. There was nothing that I experienced that wasn't there to show me something or to remind me of something. And I realized that after I came back. And that experience with myself as a small girl is that. It's enjoying the moment. It's being in the moment, being present in the moment. And that little girl wasn't thinking about tomorrow or in the next few hours what was going to happen or what they needed to be doing. She was just lost in that moment and very content and safe and happy and allowing herself to just be.
And so it was a constructed scene to convey a message to you. It wasn't, I suppose, spontaneous, and it's somehow created by you and your mind.
More than likely. And I don't believe that anything I experienced in that near-death experience was by mistake. I can literally say now that I think I was destined to maybe have that experience, to learn the lessons that I needed to be shown at that time. You know, we all have our pathway, right? And we're all here to learn about ourselves and discover who we really are.
Next, you saw your grandparents, who were also younger versions of themselves.
Yeah. And you know, here's the thing. I mean, I didn't know them as young people. I didn't know them as, you know, how they presented to me. But it didn't matter because I instantly knew who they were. And the same as one of my grandfathers, I never met him, Simon. He died before I was born. But I knew him. I knew him straight away. I mean, I'd experienced him as a child myself, having my own mediumistic, you know, experiences. I'd had visitations and people's sort of faces floating around my room, etc. And he was very much one of those. But regardless, I knew who he was. I knew he was my grandfather. And like I said, it's a knowing. I think in some ways it went to show me that, you know, when we're here, we've crossed, if you like, the veil, as they call it. Some people call it, you know, the veil between that world and this. And as we pass through that veil, a lot of our memories or a lot of our what we know that life to be gets left behind. Because I think it would be too much to have all of it in our memory now. You know, it would mean that every time life got hard or anything, we'd be like, oh, yeah, can't be dealing with this, might just go home, you know?
Your grandparents were presenting themselves to you, is how you kind of described it, as younger versions of themselves. So do you think that actually their real existence, what they really look like, is something completely different, and maybe not even human, some kind of spiritual entity?
That I couldn't comment on. I you know, I wouldn't know that. There was at no time anything was presented to me as non-human looking. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that from what I experienced is that we would go back to the prime of our life because that's where they're most happiest. So they've obviously gone back to a place where they're the happiest and they don't need to worry about failing bodies or ailing bodies, you know?
Yeah, why would you want to spend all that time in the afterlife as a 70-year-old with aching limbs?
Yeah, exactly. You know, sitting in the corner worrying about your rheumatoid arthritis and the pains, and you wouldn't, would you?
No.
You know?
Next, you went on to a place called the Halls of Learning. So what was that?
So the Halls of Learning, oh gosh, it's how can I put this simply? For me, it was like a massive library, just a huge, massive library. And everything you could possibly want to learn about is there. And what I found fascinating was it wasn't just, you know, understanding electronics or understanding science or, you know, anything that we would kind of consider the need to learn. It was also a lot about understanding compassion, empathy, forgiveness, you know, all the different emotions, an array of emotions, to understand that as well as, you know, all the sort of technical things, if you like, or the learning of discovery of electronics, like I say, or understanding. I, you know, if you look at how far our world has come now, I could look back at that and say, well, it's got to come from somewhere, right?
All the technical inspiration.
Yeah, it makes sense that our inspiration is coming from, you know, whether it's information that we already learnt in the halls of learning whilst we were there before we came here, that we bring with us and we get reminded of at set times in our life, or whether we're being influenced by others that are in the spirit world that are influencing us with the information that they've learned.
They also had a thing where it was kind of like the halls of learning and you saw all these books, but it was an environment that was constructed just for you to show it to you. And actually the halls of learning was something completely different and they exposed you to it for a short while.
Yeah. So as I'm looking at it, I'm looking as if I'm standing in a library with just books everywhere. And here's the thing that I think, one of the biggest things from my experience was we get shown things in a way to help us to understand them. And that doesn't mean that somebody else could be stood in the halls of learning and seeing it in a slightly different way because that's easier for them to accept, you know? But the way it was presented to me was like a library, books everywhere, and you could pick up any book and sit and be able to sort of read it and go through it. But for those that are advanced in being of understanding the halls of learning, the physical books, the books to pick up and open up to read were no longer required. It was, the information was there. It was all around us. It was just energy to connect to. And there were people that was sat there without a book and just allowing themselves to be submersed in the information that was all around them, and just being able to filter them. And I know that as I got exposed to that, it was just like being hit by a barrage of information coming from all directions and just all these thoughts spinning into my head that, you know, was just like, whoa, overload. And, you know, which is why Muggins here would probably be better off by give me the book to begin with, you know, because I wasn't advanced enough to be able to take all that information right off the get like that.
Because your husband said it takes some getting used to, and even he hasn't quite got there.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, he'd been there at that point, he'd been there 4 years. So, and even he was still sort of like, trying to get used to it, obviously, because I think it is. It's just, I think there's a lot, you know, we don't stop learning. We don't stop just because we go back home, if you like, because that's how it feels, is home. We don't stop learning. We don't stop evolving. We don't stop learning new things and experiencing and expanding who we are. There has to be a point to this, right?
Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, some of you know I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. You asked them about books about engineering and medical science and why would you need that there? And they said it was, could be that they were preparing for their next life. Was that right? It kind of suggests reincarnation.
Yeah, so it's that whole, like I said earlier, you know, it's that are we learning this? We're learning this information for some. We're learning this information to bring it back here so that at set points in our life, they're going to be, those memories are going to be reignited, or whether they're learning it to be able to infiltrate it, to be able to pass that information on, you know, because we all have our spirit teams that work with us, which I already knew about with my mediumship, is that family group, that team that kind of works with you, that helps to guide you. And I think, you know, looking back as I was reading the book, writing the book and going through the lessons that I had learned, I think that was the biggest fascination for me, was seeing the correlation to understand what I'd been shown, what I'd been taught, and what the point of those things were. And it made me realize how many times I've come across things in my life or thought about things in my life, and I've thought, oh, that's an idea. And that idea is so familiar feeling. It doesn't feel like it's something new. It might be the first time you're hearing something, and yet it feels familiar. So is that because I've learned them already in the halls of learning? So then when they come along, they feel familiar.
It's lodged in your subconscious somehow or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even, you know, the memories of home are lodged in our subconscious. I think, you know, the memories of our life before we came here are lodged in our subconscious. I mean, there's plenty of stories, isn't there, about children that remember their previous lives or talk about experiences that they've had that they haven't had in this world and they haven't had in this life, but they know it. And they have detailed information. It's lodged in our subconscious.
Moving on then, you were in this apartment, in this flat, and it was in Poole, which is a town here in Dorset. And yeah, you said you looked out of the window and you could see Poole Quay. But do you think you were in some way actually in Poole, or they've made a complete copy of it just for you while you were there?
Probably is a copy just for me, because that's where I felt safest. That was my safe place. That was a place that I would feel relaxed and safe in. This was memories of childhood that I'd grown up with, that, you know, I'd spent so much time there, that I guess it was my knowing that this was a safe place. So it's created. I can't tell you that, oh, no, there are replicas of everything, you know, and there's replicas there. I can only tell you what I experienced. And I know that my grandparents' flat was just how I always remember it. And the scenes and everything else were, in so many ways, exactly how I remember them as childhood. Although the sky was different, the energy was different, but it felt familiar and safe. And it was actually something that I experienced later on with my grandmother, with people returning, you know, and how they would always be taken to somewhere that they felt safe. And it was familiar for them to get used to the fact that they were no longer in their earthly body.
Because there's a space in the afterlife that I think is called Summerland. A lot of people report in near-death experiences, and also I think through mediums, that they go to a space that's like a wonderful summer's day, and that it's wonderful fields and forests, and it's just a really nice place to be, and it became known as Summerland.
Okay, I've never heard of the term Summerland, okay, if I'm honest. But then you're describing very much how, you know, one of the first places I was at was that beautiful field, and, you know, a bright summer's day, and feeling absolutely exhilarated and full of energy.
Yeah, and so the pool, the pool that you were in, it was in that sort of a space, wasn't it? And it was like you say, constructed just for you, perhaps, because it was the best way to acclimatize you to that space?
I suppose, yeah, because I can't, if I'm honest, I can't imagine my grandparents would still be living in that flat.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, they even moved from that flat when they were here. You know, the last few years of their life together was spent at a completely different flat, you know. So they didn't stay there. So it's just interesting that that was a place that I was taken to. I didn't stop to ask why I was taken there. It just felt safe. It felt comfortable, like a big hug, a warm hug, you know?
Yeah. Well, things changed then, didn't they? Because you went on to another space, and what you say in the book is, I looked around and people were gathered together, holding hands and creating the most beautiful energy that appeared to be washing over a darker, denser energy. So what was happening there?
So that was the experience I had with my nan. Because, you know, this was, each of my grandparents seemed to take me on a journey to show me what they do and what they choose to do for some of their time at this moment in time. And my nan's choice was to be a part of this group that was helping people that were suffering with dark energy. And when I say dark energy, this, I'm not talking evil spirits and all of that. And I don't mean that at all, but it was just this energy, this depressive energy, this sad energy, this, you know, what I experienced with the young lad that I was being shown was just his negative thoughts and dark thoughts and the way it brought him down and the sadness that created, the anxiety that created. And I just couldn't understand why, you know, with all this around, why would you have that? Why would you experience that? And these beautiful souls that chose to gather around, to send and push back with love and to just send love to these lost souls, really, or that were going through such hard times in their life that just needed that extra comfort, that just needed that extra reassurance and assurance. I just found it really hard. I just found it very emotional and very hard to bear. It was like being stabbed with 1,000 daggers, you know?
Because you stepped into it, didn't you? And you have a whole list of negative thoughts that you have in the book.
Yeah, it's horrible. And I just remember feeling really sad and really upset that my nan would choose to put herself in that position and to feel those emotions on a regular basis. But it was understanding and experiencing that beauty of pushing back with love. And again, looking back on that journey to understand that section was teaching me that no matter how difficult life becomes, no matter what gets thrown at us, no matter how hard the pathway is, in amongst it all, we have to find the love, because the love is at the core of everything. And if we come from a place of love rather than a place of fear, then we'll get through. It might be baby steps. It might take us a little while to get there, but we'll get through. We'll make it happen. But it was just so sad. And I just remember thinking I could never imagine sinking into that. And yet when I came back and, you know, I had to get on with my life here, I was in such turmoil that I went through a space of when I had a breakdown, basically, and became incredibly depressed because I felt so incredibly homesick and I felt all those dark thoughts. And I easily got sucked into it and got swallowed up by it. So as much as in that space, I was looking at it thinking, how can they get sucked into that negativity when there's all this love around them and all this love being pushed towards them? Well, I got to experience that for myself when I came back.
Your nan said that she felt she needed to give something as she felt she had been a bit of a pain when she was alive.
Do you know what? My nan was such, you know, heart of gold. And heart was in the right place, but her, I don't think she really had that much of a filter system. She just kind of said things as she thought them.
Yeah.
They weren't always kind and they weren't always polite and they weren't always, they could have quite a ripping effect on somebody's self-esteem, you know? I think that's what she was referring to.
Because all the people that were having this negativity, they were alive, weren't they? It wasn't like they died and they were kind of lost souls in some dark space.
No, not at all. They were alive. They were here. We're all alive, right? But they were here. They were having an earthly experience. And it was within that earthly experience that they were having that. And you know, here's the thing. Nobody pointed that out. Nobody told me that, like, the lad that I was looking at was on the earth plane. I just knew. It's so, again, it's like that information. It's that connected to everything. Some of it doesn't need to be explained. You just know. You just knew it. Because it's, like I said, it was also new and exciting, but at the same time, old and familiar. It's such this diversity of this all feels old and familiar because I know this. This is returning home. I know this. But at the same time, it's all kind of new and exciting, and it's like I'm learning it for the first time.
It's like when you're born, you forget, they take it away on purpose. Like you were saying, you wouldn't want to have it all. But also, there's something you say in that part of the book. They said to you that life creates a barrier that can stop you from truly feeling connected.
Yeah. And I experienced that myself, like I said, when I went through, you know, my own breakdown and what have you. And I think this is it. We can become so bogged down with life and all the distractions that this life brings to us at the same time as all the negativity, all those emotions, that place that comes from fear, worrying about things, looking at everything and creating our own limitations. And in doing that, we cut our own connection off with everything that is, because our natural born instinct is connected to everything. We are energy that is connected to everything else, and we forget that. And everything we need to know is there. If we can just allow ourselves to get to that space within ourselves that is connected to everything and truly know ourselves, then all the answers we need is there. Everything that we need guidance on is there. It's all within us, but we spend our whole lives looking outside of ourselves and looking for the answers outside when it's all within us.
And that's where would you talk about meditation and that sort of thing rather than watching the TV and looking at your phone?
Yeah, definitely. And I think meditation absolutely helps. And it's also that space to just to really get to know yourself. I mean, we're very good, aren't we, as human beings, to be able to look at other people and go, wow, look at that one. You know, she should be doing this, or he should be doing that, or he would be much better if he did it this way, or if he did it that way. Or, you know, we're very good at judging other people and examining other people's lives and their choices in life. But we don't really do it to ourselves very often, and we don't really take the time to really look within and to really understand, hey, why does that trigger me so much? Why is that such a, why does that have such an effect on me? Ooh, that brings up memories. What's those memories about? What's that about? Why did I react like that? Why do I, you know, we don't question ourselves. We don't examine our own life. And by getting to know ourselves, we start to get rid of the fear that sits around us. and we start to become more confident with our own connection. Because the more we get to know ourselves, the more you do start to connect with everything that's around you. And the more we take that time to meditate and really sit within our own energy and our own power, if you like, and to be able to sit not only with our own power, but then to sit connected with the power of everything around us. And that just opens up a whole another world. And all that information is there. Those halls of learning can be tapped into in a heartbeat. And, you know, we can put it out there and sort of, we need the answer to this, or we need some guidance, or moving. Am I doing the right thing if I go this way? Your instinct will tell you that. That connection with everything will tell you that. And that inspired thoughts come in. And then as we ask for those answers, the universe, if you like, responds to us. But we have to be connected to be able to hear it. Otherwise, we're just wrapped up in, we're sitting mindlessly watching a TV, or, you know, the programs are just running on, or people constantly have to have noise around them. So if it's not a TV, it's a radio. If it's not a radio, it's a CD, or it's, you know, music being played on the phone, or their, you know, however they play their music. So we're constantly hearing noise, and we're shutting out the energy and the connection of the natural universe. You know, the birds, the bees, all that magic of the insects and, you know, the natural world survives by instinct. They're not listening to something else. They're listening to their own energy and what it's telling them.
Their own kind of engine and instincts, stuff that's come through evolution and...
Yeah, they're not connected to everything that is. They know when winter's coming. They know when spring's coming. They know when summer's on its way. Nobody's telling them that. They don't switch on a radio and go, oh, everybody get ready. They instinctively know because they're connected to everything.
I wanted to talk to about another part of the near-death experience, which I found really fascinating. And you started this chapter, you called it Flickering Flames. So what are they?
Just the beauty of us and the energy that we put out, the lights, the colors of our own individual energy, and then how those energy colors change when other people come into our pathway, and how when we connect, how those energies change color and the colors change color. And it was watching souls that have chosen to go to Earth for an experience, and then watching the souls coming back from Earth and returning home, if you like, and just the beauty of the colors that were surrounding them and the way they moved with their emotions and their energy. And then, like I say, as they were connecting to say goodbye to their soul family as they were leaving to go to Earth, in the same way as, you know, we experience loss and birth here in the opposite way. So every time a baby is born here, we celebrate. Every time somebody passes and returns home, we grieve. And, you know, in exactly the same way as when a soul was leaving to come to Earth, it was a type of grief, but it wasn't that wrenching grief, because they knew that they'd see each other again, and they knew that they would always stay connected, but the memory would just fade while they were here. And it was just watching that energy change as they returned, and then watching the energy of them changing and all the different colors of when they came back and were brought back after they passed. And it was, that's why I called it the flickering flames, because it was just like looking at all these dancing flames of colors that were just vibrant and changing and dancing everywhere. It's fascinating to watch.
And your grandparents had chosen to take on the work of kind of being escorts and bringing them back and then taking them forward as well.
Yeah, so my grandfather was very much the one that was sort of, you know, taking souls and traveling with them, if you like a traveling companion. And I remember questioning to say, but when the soul returns, you bring them back and you travel with them. But I thought that they traveled with loved ones, that they're met by loved ones. And then that's when they told me, look closer. And within those flickering flames, within those colors of the dancing, was the soul that was returning, you know, surrounded by their loved ones and celebrating with their loved ones. But then my grandfather was just that, like the bus driver, you know, in effect, he was the one that was just guiding them back, bringing them back, and whilst they allowed themselves to reconnect. Which is interesting, because I wonder who brought me back. You know, when I was with my husband and we returned, there must have been somebody doing that job then, right? I just wasn't paying attention and didn't notice who it was.
Didn't you say that you thought when people died that there was people to greet them at their death to bring them through? And the granddad said to you, yeah, but look closer at the flame.
Yeah, so that's what I've literally just described, was, you know, how they literally was, when you looked closer in, there was their loved ones all within that. Within those flames still dancing around, they were all there. But it was just my grandfather was being like the bus driver, bringing the group back into the fold.
Then you kind of got to a time where they were saying, you've got to come back. At one point they said to you, time does not exist here, and what happens for us over years could be a blink of an eye there. But you also started thinking, why does everybody keep saying there's a lack of time and I have to go back?
I know. Well, I didn't know at that point it was about going back. But, you know, it just became these certain points when it was like, okay, we need to move on now. We need to get on with this because we don't have time for that. I remember, you know, meeting up with my auntie and saying to her, oh, fantastic, it was fascinating. She was like, oh, so where are you going to take me? What, you know, what do you do? What are you going to show me? And she was like, oh, no, we don't have time for that. And it was like, such is confusion. I was like, there is no time. Time doesn't exist over here. Why do you keep saying that there's no time? That doesn't make any sense to me. How can there be no time when time doesn't exist? But unbeknown to me, they all knew I was going home. I was going back, that I couldn't stay, that this wasn't a permanent thing. I hadn't permanently gone home, and that I was being returned. Return to sender, thanks very much. You know, I wasn't aware of that. So, you know, they kept saying about going back only towards the end, when it suddenly became all about going back. And then I was like, what? What do you mean? And that's when I got a bit panicky, because I was like, well, what do you mean? Hold on, I've only just got you all back. What do you mean I've got to go back? And I remember sort of scrabbling, trying to hold on to my husband and sort of go, no, I don't want to go back. I've just got you back. I don't want to. And he was just like, no, you have to. And he said, what about the kids? And it was like that panicky feeling that, oh no, I've forgotten the kids. I've left the kids behind. And that, like you've lost them in a supermarket or something. You know, you get that panicky feeling, oh no, where are the kids? And I felt that. And at the same time, Ian just shoved me, just shoved my shoulder. And the next thing I know, I just had this doctor shouting in my face and calling my name. And I just remember thinking how rude he was.
So you said that you had difficulty when you came back integrating this into your life.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I think because at the end of the day, it's so complicated, because there's this huge part of me that I was feeling rejected. I was feeling homesick. I was feeling that I was having to grieve my husband all over again. There were all these emotions that were left with me, and feeling I wasn't good enough to stay. I almost felt I was being punished having to come back. But at the same time, on the flip side of that was, why would I want to be anywhere else but here with my kids and my parents and, you know, my friends? And at the same time, you know, I was grateful to be alive and to have more of an experience and to learn all the things that I have to learn and be here for that. But at the same time, I was angry. I was angry with the spirit world. And I was, so this is what I'm saying. This is where it's going to become confusing, you know, because I can tell you that I was ecstatically happy to be back with my kids, but I was absolutely miserable to not be in heaven. And that's the complexity of that, is the different sides of the emotion that I was going through. And it was a push and pull completely. I never wanted to show my kids or my parents just how desperately sad I was about it all, because I felt guilty that I felt that way. I felt guilty that I should feel that I didn't really want to be here, that I wanted to be back home, if you like. And I was angry with the spirit world for rejecting me. I was angry that they'd given me my husband back and then taken him away again. So all the diversity of those emotions just create this inner war with inside. And I went through just my own hell within my own mind, my own turmoil. I shut the spirit world off. I shut everything else off. My connections to everything off. At being a medium, I shut that off because I was like, no, I'm not going to do your dirty work for you. I'm not going to, you know, work for you anymore. Thanks very much. You rejected me. You didn't want me. And I became like the petulant child, really, stamping her feet and saying, nope, not doing that anymore. And I threw myself into everything material and everything life to just avoid it. And there is no avoiding it. And I think that was the thing. I quickly came to learn that actually we can't keep hold of these things. You know, we have to talk about them. And it's important to find somebody that you can offload that to and talk that through with. Because otherwise it just becomes this inner dialogue that just gets out of control and just sucks you down deeper and deeper.
But now you've worked your way through it and you're back to being a medium?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've worked my way through it, and it was a hard slog, but it was going back over this journey. And that's why I started to write it, because going back over the journey started to show me the lessons of what I'd been taught, and then starting to apply them, and then opening myself up to allow the journey to unfold and to really start to go within and inward to discover who I am, what's my role in all of this, what's my place within all of this, and my own connection with all that is, and how does that fit in? And then I started to really just allow myself to reopen, reconnect with my spirit team, and start working again with spirit as a medium. But also, like I say, to go back over that journey to realize nothing happens by chance. Nothing happens without reason. And, you know, we don't all have to die and have a near-death experience to have these lessons. If we just take the time to stop and actually go back over our life journey, and that's not to relive it, but it's just to go back over the life journey to go, I understand now that that's why I am like that in these circumstances, because of those experiences, and understand who we are and what made us who we are.
Has your mediumship changed? Is it, since you went to the afterlife, is it like the veil is much thinner now and your mediumship is different?
I think for my mediumship is more, it's the difference between before, I always believed in the afterlife and I always believed in my connection. Now I know. That's the difference. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way I can describe it. It's the difference between believing in something and knowing. I know now that that communication is absolutely what it is. And before, I just believed it. And I'd had it proved and I believed in it. Now I know. And it's more solid. It's just that knowing. It's a whole different ball game, knowing something rather than just believing it and having faith in something and knowing. It's so hard to put into words.
Yeah, sounds like it. Something we worked out before we started recording is that we live maybe 5 minutes apart. Your house is just around the corner.
Yeah.
You also work at the Spiritualist Church. What do you do there?
Yeah, so the Spiritualist Church is really, I mean, at the moment, you know, because this pandemic, we are closed, but there is all about, it's having those divine services. It's being able to bring like-minded people together and opening our doors to any and all religions. If you want to walk through our doors, walk through our doors. It's about helping you to understand that life continues. It's proving that life continues. It's being able to share life philosophy. It's being able to, you know, give you a safe place to come to talk about anything that's going on in your life that you're struggling with. It's a place where healing is given on a regular basis. We have a beautiful healing team that work from the church, and we have a fabulous committee that work tirelessly to keep the doors open and to allow it to be that space to be able to say, hey, if you want to explore this, life continues, let us show you how. And you know, it's just a beautiful place that's full of love.
And you have mediums coming in regularly, clairvoyants and psychics.
Yeah, we have some great mediums that work from our place, from all over. And they come down, they hold workshops, we hold workshops, we do special event evenings. We have great local mediums that come and take services. So every service is taken by someone different every time. And they bring their own uniqueness to everything, you know? So they'll bring their own unique gift of mediumship or their own unique gift of philosophy and their own unique way of being able to show that life continues.
Well, Mickey, it's been great having you on the podcast. It's been such a fascinating conversation. And your book is Dying to See You, A Medium Describes Her Near-Death Experience. And that's on Amazon, isn't it?
Yes, it's on Amazon. It can also be obtained through my website, which is mickeyhavelock.com.
And can people get sittings with you over Zoom, that sort of thing?
Yes, I'm doing all mine by Zoom at the moment, but it's all, you know, everything is done through my website, which is, again, mickeyhavelock.com. And you can book readings and sittings. I also do intuitive coaching, which is, again, it's more of a coaching sessions to help you to understand who you are and help you to grow in your own confidence and to release those barriers of fear that stop you from connecting to everything that is and to naturally be able to form your own pathway with confidence.
Okay. Well, this has been great. And perhaps you could come on the podcast again another time and we could just talk about the mediumship and everything you've experienced with that.
Yeah, sure.
Excellent.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's been great. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And that was an interview with Mickey Havelock about her book, Dying to See You, A Medium Describes Her Near-Death Experience. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And if you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.